Hello there. Today is Friday, October 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Trump doubles down on asking a foreign nation to investigate a political rival.
Likewise, China should start an investigation into the Biden.
Protests in Iraq turn deadly and violent. Also ahead, classic 70s rockers Fleetwood Mac announced the date of their last performance of a year-long world tour. It's all on today's International Edition. President Donald Trump Thursday publicly encouraged China to investigate his Democratic political rival Joe Biden, snubbing his nose in an impeachment inquiry into whether a similar private appeal to another foreign government violated his oath of office. By publicly egging on China, Trump was amplifying the message that he would or that he delivered in private to the president of Ukraine. Trump, who has defended his contact with that country's leader as perfect, went further in expanding his request to China, a communist world power that has much at stake in its relationship with the United States in its ongoing trade war. VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman has this update.
Answering questions from reporters on Thursday morning, Trump was asked what favor exactly he desired from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky during a July 25th telephone call.
They should investigate the Bidens.
And he is also calling for China to conduct a similar investigation, alleging, without providing evidence, the former vice president and his son scammed the two countries. Trump faces an impeachment inquiry, which centers on a whistleblower complaint that the president abused his power by soliciting interference in next year's election from a foreign country, namely Ukraine. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the White House.
Well, in the case of both Ukraine and China, Trump has made his allegations against Biden without evidence of any wrongdoing. House Intelligence Committee Chair Adam Schiff, who is heading up the impeachment inquiry, responded to Trump's latest remarks about asking China to investigate his political rival.
I find, once again, the president inviting another country to interfere in our presidential elections repugnant. And a fundamental breach of his oath of office.
Biden's campaign chairman said Trump's assertions merely show he's afraid of facing Biden in next year's election. Joining us now to understand what it all means is criminal defense attorney and former Central Intelligence Agency officer Jack Rice. Jack, what does this all say and what does it all mean?
Well, it appears that the president is trying to normalize his behavior. This is about more than just what he said to the Ukrainians. Now this is about what he said to the Chinese and that this is something that presidents do. So that seems to be one piece of this. The second part of it is that he is just simply piling on Joe Biden because that's part of the process. I think the real problem that we have right now is that this is not normal behavior. This is not what a president does, and this is something that simply is unacceptable. And at some point, we have to address that point. If we think about the president's logical outcome, here is the problem. If we normalize this behavior, that means that every future president, right before they're running for office, they can reach out across the world to our allies and our adversaries and say, I want your intelligence organizations to target my opponent, develop a portfolio, and then give it to me so I can use it against them. If we're accepting this as normal and acceptable, that means that that would be okay. It's very clear that the law says it is not. Now, the problem that we're facing right now is that the impeachment inquiry is not a criminal question, not really. It is in the sense that they have to make a determination about whether or not this president did something wrong. But in the end, this is a political question. And the political question comes down to one issue, whether or not this president lacks the character to be the president of the United States. And what I would argue is that anybody who reaches out to a foreign power to get dirt on a political adversary does not have the character to be president of the United States. And then I think that this is a real and fundamental question, not just for the Democrats. The Republicans themselves have used this very same argument when they were talking about Bill Clinton. It's not a Clinton question, but they were right in the sense that if you're going to be president of the United States, then you have to have sufficient character. Every president has to put country before party, and country before self. That's the question that needs to be answered here, because what I saw on the White House lawn on Thursday from this president is that he decided to put politics and party before country and self before country, and that is fundamentally unacceptable. That is not a Republican question. That is not a Democrat question. That is an American question, and that's really what Congress has to address right now.
The president, he's saying that he's speaking to these other countries because he's wanting to crack down on their corruption. It would also seem that by the comments about China that it would pose some complication if other countries think that they can dig up dirt on potential rivals to get something from the United States of America, the most powerful country in the world. What are the ramifications of something like that?
As this investigation continues to move forward, what we seem to be finding is almost a shadow government underneath the president internationally. When you see he's sending his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, to Ukraine to investigate and then bring that information back so they can actually remove a sitting U.S. ambassador, despite the fact that the information that he brings back has already been investigated by the United States and deemed to be insufficient, improper, and simply wrong. The concern here is that you're actually undercutting the legitimate United States government, the State Department, and other organizations within the U.S. government. It hurts the credibility of the United States on the world stage, because our question becomes, and the question around the world becomes, am I talking to the United States right now? Or am I talking to somebody within the United States, but who doesn't actually represent the United States? And imagine if you're talking to a U.S. ambassador and you don't know if that's the case. That's where we are right now as well. So that's a national security question, and one that I'm deeply concerned about, because this president has already undercut the Justice Department. This president has already undercut the intelligence community. Now he's undercutting the State Department. And where does it end? This brings me back to the question of character and leadership and the justification and sufficiency of anybody to hold that office. And that is a question that must be answered.
All right. Criminal defense attorney and former Central Intelligence Agency Jack Rice, thank you for being with us. About 4,000 protesters rallied in Iraq's capital of Baghdad Thursday, defying a government-imposed curfew to call for jobs, improved services, and an end to widespread corruption. Police used water cannons and live ammunition to disperse protesters who tahrir to reach the central Tahrir Square. Prime Minister is calling for dialogue with protesters after at least 28 people died in the rallies. VOA's Latika Hoke reports.
Protesters had to dodge bullets and water cannon as they violated the early morning curfew on Thursday, burning tires and shouting anti-government slogans. They are demanding jobs, better services, and an end to official corruption. The demonstrations that began Tuesday in the capital, Baghdad, quickly spread to other southern cities.
People are being robbed. They are begging in the street. There is no work. You come to protest, and they fire at you. Live gunfire.
Iraq's Prime Minister Adel Abdul Mahdi held an emergency meeting on Wednesday and ordered a curfew in Baghdad. Earlier, he had promised more jobs for young people. He also instructed the oil ministry to ensure that half of the jobs in new contracts with foreign companies have to be given to local workers. In a statement published in the local media on Thursday, Abdul Mahdi's office said the prime minister was reaching out to protesters in a bid to end the political crisis. But that did not seem to convince the angry crowds. Later Thursday, protesters burned a police vehicle in Baghdad.
We want to change the regime. They've arrested our people. They beat them and shot at them, things they didn't do to terrorists. What have we done? Are we suicide bombers? We are here to call for our rights.
Close to 30 people have been killed, including two police officers, during the recent demonstrations in Baghdad and other southern cities. Hundreds have been injured. The protests are the first major challenge to the one-year-old government of Abdul Mahdi, especially as there are no clear leaders to address.
This is the people's protest. It is not being directed by anyone. These people are all revolting, and they will not stop until the government changes.
Iraq has some of the world's largest reserves of oil, but many of its 40 million people live in poverty without adequate health care, education, or power and water supply. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
here are some of the stories we are following at voanews.com. Sudan is seeking the removal from the U.S. terrorism list. Efforts are ramping up to resolve the Yemen conflict following a recent attack on a major Saudi oil refinery. The Trump administration is shifting to privatize migrant child detention. And a knife-wielding IT worker kills four people at a Paris police headquarters. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The European Union has reacted with skepticism to new proposals from Britain for a deal to leave the bloc. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson outlined the plans Tuesday, which aimed to break the impasse over the future of the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, which becomes an external EU frontier after Brexit. Britain is due to leave the EU at the end of the month. Right in the middle of the show, I sneeze. Britain is due to leave the EU at the end of the month, as Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
In front of party supporters Tuesday, Prime Minister Johnson repeated his Brexit pledge.
Whatever happens, we must come out by the end of October.
Johnson's new proposals to the EU would eliminate the so-called Irish backstop from the withdrawal agreement, which would have kept Britain bound closely to EU rules to prevent a hard border in Northern Ireland until an alternative could be agreed. Instead, Britain is proposing Northern Ireland stays in the European single market for goods, but leaves the bloc's customs union. This would require some customs checks close to the border. Early reaction suggests the plans fall short of EU and Irish demands.
We don't think that it is really the safeguard that islands need.
To be frank, a lot of work still need to be done.
There are domestic hurdles too. Even if Boris Johnson and the EU can strike a deal, it still has to be ratified in Parliament.
The European Union now is worried that Boris Johnson has created a scenario, created such a divided House of Commons that any deal that Boris Johnson comes back with can't be voted through by these Labour MPs.
Johnson's predecessor, Theresa May, saw her withdrawal agreement rejected three times, and the government would likely be reliant on opposition Labour votes.
It's worse than Theresa May's deal. I can't see it getting the support that he thinks it will get.
Recent legislation compels the Prime Minister to ask Brussels for a Brexit extension if he can't strike a deal.
So the options open to Boris Johnson are essentially to resign as Prime Minister or to go and request that extension, but make it very clear that he's being dragged there and he doesn't want to be there, maybe try and stage a walkout of the council halfway through or so on. What he really wants to make clear is to those Brexit voters, those Brexit supporters, that he is breaking his promise, but he really doesn't want to.
With an election likely imminent, the political manoeuvring is intended not just for Europe, but also for the British electorate back home. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Ebola is back and again spreading quickly in several African countries, with the Democratic Republic of Congo in particular peril. VOA's Plugged In traveled with U.S. health officials in mid-September to the epicenter of the outbreak along the country's remote northeast border. The U.S.-led delegation brought hope and medicine to the region, but serious challenges remain. Mil Arcega was on the trip and reports from the DRC.
It's a journey few Westerners will make. Over rainforests and active volcanoes, past the winding, dusty roads leading to the remote village of Butembo. Here, elbow bumps replace handshakes. Shoes and hands are disinfected. Anyone who enters, check for fever. This is U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar's first visit to the Ebola Treatment Center in Butembo, the front line in the battle to stop the deadly virus.
It's an incredibly tragic situation, especially to see the children. So many children. I think that probably was one of the things that struck me the most, were how many kids are here. But I also came away with more hope than I thought I would.
The outbreak began last year. It's now the second worst ever. More than 3,000 people infected, more than 2,000 dead. But there is hope for a cure, the development of two new drugs synthesized from the blood of an Ebola-resistant patient.
You know, it's a game changer. It's a game changer.
Dr. Anthony Fauci was part of the team that helped develop the new drugs. Not a cure exactly, but extremely effective.
When you say a cure, it's almost as if everybody who gets it is now going to be okay. There are still going to be people who come in so advanced that no drug is going to help them. But clearly, if you get one or the other of these two drugs, you dramatically diminish the mortality of Ebola.
But cultural mistrust is common here. Some believe Ebola is not a virus, but a man-made poison.
The misguided perception of Ebola treatment centers in the past has been that sick people would walk into these centers, and they would ultimately leave either in a body bag or in a coffin. But there's a lot of people in this community working hard to change that perception.
Among them, Mulyanza Huguet. The young woman made a full recovery after receiving the experimental drug monoclonal antibody 114. Today, she goes from village to village, urging families to seek early treatment. Another serious challenge is security. More than 100 warring factions vie for dominance along the porous eastern borders of the Congo. In this part of the world, protecting health workers is a full-time job.
Thousands of, security incidents, and anytime you have disruption in your intervention, of course, the virus will replicate, and you have to catch up. So it's taking a lot of energy and time.
The United States has already invested over $300 million to develop anti-Ebola vaccines and treatments. Secretary Azar hopes his visit demonstrates America's commitment to the region.
If it helps reinforce the fact that we were in this before the first Ebola case and we're going to be there after the last Ebola case and it's a part of a community effort and community engagement, well, then I'm delighted if it had any impact.
Millar Sega, VOA News in Butembo, DRC.
And you're listening to International Edition, back in a moment.
Our voices, we're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices
with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka. Join us on Facebook at VOA Our Voices.
It's time for Our Voices.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on The Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time.
With David Bandy.
VOA's International Edition continues. Hawaii's vibrant reefs are home to amazing populations of corals and reef, which are undergoing stress and danger from a spike in nearby ocean temperatures. A similar underwater heat wave damaged the reef 4 years ago. Now researcher Greg Asner and others are using divers and satellites to study these corals and find ways to protect them. VOA's Jim Randall has the story.
Bright-colored data show Hawaii's reefs in trouble. Brighter colors mean hotter water more likely to damage coral by bleaching. Some signs of bleaching corals greet divers in Hawaiian waters. The reefs are still recovering from an ocean heat wave 4 years ago. Scientists are studying the ecosystem as they seek ways to preserve it for future generations. Linking underwater observations with satellite data could help.
Every dive is just a small little taste of what's going on. So what's really important here is that we're taking these measurements, connecting them to our aircraft data, and then connecting them again to the satellite data. And that lets us scale up to see the big picture, to get the truth about what's going on here.
Hawaii's coral reefs are critical, say experts. Not only do they attract tourists who boost the economy, the reefs help protect Hawaii's beaches and facilities from storm waves and floods. They also account for a quarter of sea species, even though they're just a small slice of the ocean. Reefs are the most diverse marine ecosystems on Earth, says oceanographer Jameson Gove.
Corals provide habitat for fish, and these are fish that are important for ecosystem functions. These are fish that are sustenance for local people, and of course our economy, whether it's through tourism or, say, commercial fisheries.
This is what healthy reefs around the world should look like. Scientists worry that warming waters will cause Hawaii to lose this splendor and jeopardize many important fish species. Researchers and divers are seeing signs of reef bleaching many places. They're urging visitors to Hawaii to avoid further stressing the reefs by touching them, by using certain types of damaging sunscreens, and by not catching certain types of fish that help the reef.
While this news is depressing, I think that there is still reason for hope. You know, there were corals in Hawaii and around the world that survived previous bleaching events, and there are corals that were survived this bleaching event. And so the more that we can do to mitigate our impact, either locally and or globally, will really provide an opportunity for these corals to persist into the future.
Experts say protecting the reefs will continue to be a major challenge because of climate change and warming seas. Scientists say without action to reduce greenhouse gases, bleaching could become an annual event by the end of the century. Jim Randall, VOA News.
The classic rock band Fleetwood Mac is wrapping up a world tour that's taken them to more than 80 countries. The group, announcing its final 2018-2019 show, will take place on November 16th in Las Vegas. The tour, produced by Live Nation, has been sold out at every venue. The legendary group's lineup includes some originals and some newcomers. Former Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers guitarist Mike Campbell and Crowded House singer Neil Finn joined Mick Fleetwood, John McVie, Stevie Nicks, and Christine McVie. Been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us on voanews.com. We thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director Tracy Carter and our engineer Keith Holmes. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day and a great weekend.
Hello, this is James Butte, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05 and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Or you can call us on 001-202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. That's Daybreak Africa at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program is offering a reward of up to $5 million each for information leading to the identification or location of three leaders of the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS terrorist group. The three men were identified in the statement as Haji Taysir, Haji Hamid, and Haji Abdallah. All three are legacy members of the terrorist group's predecessor organization, Al-Qaeda in Iraq. Haji Taysir, whose birth name is Mutaz Numan Abin Naif Najm al-Jabouri, is a senior leader of ISIS. In the past, he has overseen bomb-making for ISIS terrorist and insurgent activities. Haji Hamid, born Sami Jassim Muhammad al-Jabouri, has been instrumental in managing finances for the ISIS's terrorist operations. While serving as ISIS deputy in southern Mosul in 2014, he reportedly supervised the group's revenue-generating operations from illicit sales of oil, gas, antiquities, and minerals. Haji Abdallah, real name Amir Muhammad Saeed Abdul Rahman al-Mola, was a religious scholar in the Al-Qaeda in Iraq terrorist group, the predecessor of ISIS. He rose through the ranks to assume a senior leadership role for ISIS. As one of ISIS's most senior ideologues, Haji Abdallah helped drive and justify the abduction, slaughter, and trafficking of the Yazidi religious minority in northwest Iraq and is believed to oversee some of the group's global terrorist operations. He is a potential successor to ISIS leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. The Rewards for Justice program is administered by the U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service. Since its inception in 1984, the program has paid in excess of $150 million to more than 100 people who provided actionable information that helped bring terrorists to justice or prevented acts of international terrorism worldwide. If anyone has more information about Haji Taysir, Haji Hamid, and Haji Abdallah, please contact the Rewards for Justice website at www.rewardsforjustice.net, email lh@rewardsforjustice.net, or contact the regional security officer at the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McKinney.